and welcome to Observations. I am your host, Sovereign Sire, and I am brought to you by the good or not so good people at julieland.com. And as always, I am joined by the marvelous and wonderful Mr. Richard Avery.
Yo.
Say it with more bass. Put more bass in your voice.
I'm trying to be all gangsta because I just watched The Wire.
You watched The Wire too much.
They showed all 5 seasons in a row on HBO. It was amazing. So I like literally all day, every day I was watching like 12 episodes a day. That's crazy.
Well, it's good. That's good to have that level of dedication.
I know. It's a great show.
I would love to. I know I'm not supposed to talk till I'm introduced, but I would love to be like, as soon as Edison invented like the phonograph, to have to be one of those first cops to wear a wire. Like, what a nightmare. Because you'd have like a horn sticking out of your suit that like records on a wax spindle. You have to be like, no, it's nothing. I'm just hanging out. can you talk into my horn?
Yeah.
I'm just a guy. No, it's not. It's not shady.
Yeah, exactly.
And that sound, ladies and gentlemen, is the completely charming Jesse Case.
Hey, thanks.
Who has come in and is already so full of charisma. It's coming out of his ears.
Whoa. Not charisma. That's a medical problem. That deserves immediate attention.
That's an STD.
Right.
Come on.
He's leaking.
A sensually transmitted disease called charisma.
Exactly.
Wow.
How are you today, Jesse?
I'm very tired, but I'm well.
I'm tired too.
We've
both been journeying. We've both on sojourns.
But you've been like around. You've been like near ISIS
yes.
and stuff. You've
been, yes, I've had encounters with terror.
I know. I've been in less scary.
I don't know.
I was in Vegas.
Possum's pouch. Kansas or Arkansas?
Comedy pouch in Possum Ridge, Arkansas.
Yeah, comedy pouch. That's
well, we were discussing.
Possum pouch. So I was talking about pussy.
What? Is that a possum pouch?
It makes me think of a vagina, right? Doesn't seem like a
possum
weird...
Possum pouch?
Seems like a weird kind of metaphor for pussy.
It does,
know.
Huh?
Yeah.
All of a sudden it kind of clicks. Like,
would that
yeah,
be...
Like,
that would be a marpusial?
Yeah. Marsupial. Wow. Look at you.
Lightning speed. No,
Sav, you better pick up your game. It's going to be like...
I've met my match. Holy shit.
We were discussing Bill Hicks. And he always used to reference his like one of his least favorite clubs, the Possum or the Comedy Pouch in Possum Ridge, Arkansas, which I always assumed was a joke, just because it's a ridiculous name.
And
my most recent tour, and that's a very real place.
So my question is, why are comedy clubs always have weird names to begin with?
I have no idea. It's the words you go bananas.
Yeah,
that's like, in Cincinnati.
Yeah,
it's
the one that I think is the weirdest is like it's like is it called like Chuckles? In New York, it's like...
There's all kinds of stuff.
Like
there's
like
one
a
called Heckler's.
Factory or like
which is the worst. Why would you name it Heckler's?
What's the biggest one in San Francisco?
There's Punchline and Cobb's.
Okay. There used to be one there way back in the day that was the early days. I'm talking like the late 70s, early
80s. San Francisco used to be the big hub of stand-up?
For
like
a long
now
time.
Yeah, it was like
LA,
the Hungry Eye and all that. Yeah. Like,
for a long time growing up, we used to go to a lot of clubs up there.
Yeah, a friend
comedians.
Was telling me about history and then he was saying...
But LA is a weird place to have as a hub of stand-up because the city itself is really humorless.
Yes.
I mean it.
Yes. Okay.
It's like you come here to make people laugh and everyone walks around permanently up their own ass. You can't see anyone's head. They're just up... Their ass.
Well, that's, right. Which kind of brings us to the topic today, which is spirituality, because I think LA is like that, where everyone, it's like, is very...
Has no spirituality?
They're very spiritual is a code word for, like, solipsism. Like,
sure.
I'm very spiritual. It means I'm very narcissistic. I'm
strategic
very
segue, by the way. Very good segue. Very
but
good.
But I think it has to do with the fact that people are humorless. Like, I think it goes hand in hand. It's like everyone's so kind of...
If you're
you
at
know,
a bar, I've been noticing this. If you're at a bar in LA hanging out, as a civilian, you're just there. You hear very little laughter, as opposed to like hanging out at a bar anywhere else. Like, I'm from Nashville,
right.
And it's just people are just cracking each other up everywhere. You're not in on their conversation, right. But whatever their story from work that day, and it's just the bars here are like this weird hushed tone of
because they're too busy texting
well,
each other.
I feel like everyone's looking at Twitter
and they're elsewhere
because everyone gives zero fucks. This
right.
is the world of like I give zero fucks. I don't care. I'm very cool. I'm only into this.
That's
only,
giving
like,
such
yeah.
a fuck though.
Yeah,
that's giving the most. They give the most fucks.
Having zero fucks. What is? It's like that line in that movie. Like having no game is game. Like when you say something like, I have no game. And the person's like, well, having no game is game. It's like,
yeah,
that is a game in itself. So yeah. It's like, yeah, saying I have zero fucks is actually you're putting right. so much the same amount of energy having no fucks than it would be to have one fuck.
Right.
Sure. I mean, sense. How many? Okay, hold on. How many game units equals a fuck? Right. If you give one fuck. Oh.
I don't know. I stopped trying math. To keep score. Yeah, I stopped trying to keep score. But okay. I agree. I've lived in LA for 35 years now, and the things I tell people all the time that want to move here. A, it's the dysfunctional people capital of the world.
Sure.
If you're crazy and you're dysfunctional, come to LA, you'll fit in. The other thing I've always told people is I truly believe that like it's so spread out, it's the most unsocial city there
oh,
is.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And you lived
absolutely.
In New York, so you know New York
is so different. Yeah. You have to be intimate, whether you're riding the subway right. or walking down the street. Like you're just forced to deal with the existence of other people, and you have to be conscientious because if you're not, they're like, hey, get out of the fucking way.
Right. Well, and
like there's no like
New York's the same experience for whatever class you're in.
You could
be like the richest person in New York. You deal with the same traffic, the same people walking.
Yeah.
LA, right. you can isolate yourself in dreamland if it's going your way.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
you can like live in a crack house in Koreatown and that's your life. And
or you could be here in Hollywood and never leave the house like I do.
Right. But everyone has a different Los Angeles based on their own life experience.
Exactly. No, that's, I never thought about that. That's so
Absolutely.
True. And I think that's another thing going back to the topic of spirituality.
Yes.
I too feel that like, the longer I've been here, there's this lack of spirituality, whether it's about religion and God, but there's a spirituality just of passion and love and intimacy. Everything's just,
oh, yeah.
I think, I don't know if it's me, but I always say the older you get, it's like the more jaded everybody is, the more bitter everybody is. Everybody's like miserable, ultimately.
It's
the world's miserable. Like there's this negative energy everywhere. Does that make sense?
Yes. I'd also say that's pretty intense here. I'd say maybe, you know. That's a little LA specific.
Yeah.
I think so.
There's no old people here. You don't see the elderly. So if you go eat, you. I mean,
no, I agree with you, but I'm just thinking I'm old. I'm gonna.
You're not old.
I have to leave.
No, you're not old.
Yeah.
And you will leave. Like you get fined. I think if you're above like 60 or something, you get technically you get fined.
they ship me out, put them on a bus.
But even that keeps people in check a little more.
Right.
Like, I don't trust this Lord of the Flies shit we have going on here because our generation, you know, we're not in charge yet. We don't know what the fuck. It's a little comforting to me to see, like, a cute old couple at the grocery store, and you just never see it here. It's all just douchebag versions of me, and it's like,
but it's funny. It's, like, really weird now. You've got me thinking, like, I don't see that, and it's weird. Now I'm going to be really observant of it. I gotta go Ralph's tomorrow and buy some groceries. I'm gonna be like, where are the old people?
I see a lot of elderly, but I live in.
Is this gonna be like Soylent?
Okay.
Is this gonna be like Soylent Green kind of a thing?
Maybe. Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah, what?
They're made out of people.
Right. What is the edamame? What is the quinoa?
Well, I feel like with spirituality, it's like I think that the religion that people here are really into is themselves.
Yes.
And some people are I'm trying to find my passion in life. And it's like, because they've dedicated themselves absolutely 100% to
superficial
achievements.
Yeah.
Like, of course, people here are in a state of spiritual fucking crisis.
Right.
Empty.
Like,
wow.
they're in crisis.
Exactly.
And that's very profound.
But they don't recognize the crisis. You know what I mean? It's like they don't recognize that, like, the problem is that, like, you're so obsessed with, like, trying to achieve this false sense of personhood through, like, your Instagram.
Yeah.
Like, this aspirational fucking living that everyone's doing.
This validation of...
You know what I mean? Like, aspirational living. It's like how TV ruined your life. You know, like, this kind of thing where people are so... they worship at that kind of shrine of themselves. Like, selfies all day.
Yeah.
Instagram. Trying to keep up with people that are in, like, five different tax brackets.
Right.
Like, from them. And then they're like, why do I feel so empty? And it's like...
Wow.
Because you're, like, living for, like, some weird mercurial ideal that's going to change tomorrow and, like...
I agree completely.
You know,
I guess that is maybe the root of spirituality, of any of the spiritual fads, like crystal therapy, fucking astrology,
right?
Whatever. It's it's an extremely narcissistic. It doesn't have much to do with how you treat others, which I guess I never really thought about until just now.
I think
it's a great point.
I think we live in
it's all so inward.
I think we live in a city and a business and an industry and then a town and a that it's just the narcissist and the narcissism is just, I think, is out of control. I think it's running rampant. And there is this, with all the young girls that I'm around, they're just, their idea of what is good and fame, you know, it's this desire to be famous
for
nothing.
People don't experience each other anymore.
No, yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like, I was going to go back to this whole thing about, like, being in New York, being social. Like, I've traveled all over the country, and I've had friends everywhere, and that's the high concept of, I've been to Nashville. God, going over to a person's house and having a barbecue and hanging out. Next week, yeah. There's just this whole...
But it's changing.
LA is just so crappy.
It's changing everywhere, but it's at this weird, like, logarithmic rate here. I mean, if you think about it, if you want to know how narcissistic you have to be to live in Los Angeles, we live on the biggest fault line in the world. So imagine moving to a city and your landlord's like, okay, look, you can live here. You can move into this apartment. It's a pretty sweet apartment. But there's a nuclear bomb somewhere in the city, and we have no idea when it's going to go off.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, well, rent's pretty cheap, right? And they'd be like, no, actually, it's more expensive than everywhere else.
Yeah.
Because that's how many assholes live here to be near this nuclear bomb.
Right.
It's like, you have to move here knowing you're probably going to be in the apocalypse. That's how much your Instagram feed is worth to you.
Yeah.
It's a fucking nightmare.
Like I said, I've been here 35 years, and I've seen a lot change here, though. I always say to everybody, like, I remember we used to always say, and you were, when you were, I don't know, how long were you in New York for, Sav?
3 years.
Yeah, like, when I used to go to New York all the time for work, we used to always say, like, in New York, if somebody hated you, they'd tell you. If they liked you, they'd tell you. Everybody was straight up.
And it was
up,
a kindness. But it was a kindness.
Yeah, but it was just straight up. It was, sure, like, no bullshit. Now it's like, even LA, that the bullshit of LA has gotten run rampant all over, like a disease over the country.
Of course.
And New York's now just as full of shit.
Yeah.
Like, all that frankness is
just
gone.
Like everyone, because everyone wants to be famous. Yeah. But no one wants to, like,
work for
it.
There's a stat that I thought was fascinating, and it's also a stat from the UK, so it means it's global, right? But I just mean, as opposed to, like, what I think of as American Western culture, they asked a bunch of kindergartners, a bunch of thousands, what do you want to be when you grow up? Yeah. And over 90% said famous, but they didn't say, like, I want to be the best guitar player.
Right.
I want to be a great comedian.
Right.
I want to be a great famous.
Right.
Doesn't fucking matter.
No, I agree.
And that's terrifying to me.
I used to,
like, that's
here's a dumb little story. I used to shoot for Maxim and stuff and FHM and all those kind of magazines for years. And every time I meet some actress, oh, this new actress you're shooting for the cover, and I won't name names because I don't want to get in trouble.
Of course.
But I'd always ask them the same question. Do you want to be famous or do you want to be an actress? And they'd look at me like, what's the difference? And I'd say, do you want to be Meryl Streep or Pamela Anderson? And they'd go, I want to be Pamela Anderson. Okay, go find your Tommy Lee. Go get crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it was like this whole thing. It was about, most people come here to be famous.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
whether it's porn, a lot of girls, you ask,
yeah, no, a lot of girls go into porn now to,
yeah,
like,
I want to be famous.
They see it as a stepping stone to being famous.
Yeah.
Well, I went into it not as a stepping stone to be famous, but I was I'm a writer.
Right.
But was kind of, I wasn't struggling, but I was definitely kind of, when I got into it.
Did you misread it as penis mightier than the sword?
Yes. It was one of those things where I started writing.
That's good. I like that.
I'm pretty proud of myself, yeah, actually.
Publishing.
That's her new website, by the way.
The penis, right? Mightier than the sword.
Pen 15.
Exactly.
Pen 15 is mightier than the sword.
Nice.
When I started writing, it was a time, well, I was always writing, but publishing has gone through a lot of changes now, right, where it's increasingly, yeah, difficult to get published and to survive doing publishing. And when I started doing sex work, a bunch of friends that went into publishing and ended up getting into the side of it, the publishing side as opposed to the writing side, were like, well, you know, I mean, now that you're doing this, like, it's going to be a lot easier. And I was like, oh yeah, I didn't think about that. But it's,
wow,
like, because they're like, because you have a built-in fan base now, like,
right,
because now more and more to get published, you have to sort of demonstrate that you have an audience that will buy your work and whatever. It's like,
so true.
And yeah, little, like, it's like basically the PR is all on you now. As the artist, it's like to sort of demonstrate that you're sellable. And so a lot of my friends that were in it were like, oh, like, it's kind of like serendipitous that this happened, that you've got this life path. Cause like now, you know, like in certain ways it's actually going to be easier,
of course,
for you to publish. So it wasn't necessarily to be famous, but it definitely was like, I was like, oh, it's like this thing I can do that will in some way help me stand out because I'm competing with so many people want to write and so many people are very good at writing.
Yeah.
And it's an unfortunate aspect of the arts today that because there's so many,
a lot of people don't
platform. It's like you're increasingly taxed to like find these ways to stand out.
A lot of people don't realize Cormac McCarthy started by doing bondage films for years and years.
And it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, yeah. People don't even realize that. Obviously, Hemingway's, you know, infamous Bukkake face.
Right.
You have to break in.
Well, no,
everybody's got to start somewhere.
But it's the thing of like Robert Anton Wilson, when someone was like, do you have advice for a young writer? And he said, involve yourself in some scandal.
Well,
like, also write about people like fucking apples on pyramids.
It's like a joke.
If you could also do that.
Here's a story that...
I'm thinking of the right author, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Naughty 23.
Here's a concept of my assistant like from 20 years ago, and I used to... It came up with this whole concept of how to be famous. It was like, as a photographer, we would be like, okay, so the best way to do this is A, you know, get like... If you had like $50,000 as opposed to getting a publicist or finding an agent, they were like, you take the $50,000 and you go find... the Paris Hilton or whoever of the time, you go, sweetheart, I'll give you $50,000 for 5 dates and a couple premieres in there. So you go out with her once to a premiere and it's like, it's Paris Hilton and so-and-so. Second date, they do their homework. By the second date, it's Paris Hilton and Richard Avery, photographer. Then it's third date is Richard Avery, photographer, boyfriend. Fourth date, it's like, oh, they're a happy couple. Fifth date, oh my God, then you never be seen. Then, oh, they broke up. And for the rest of your career, you're this... the ex.
Right.
Like
right.
You it's like, you know, it's like celebrity by association. And next thing you know, you can live off of that. Cause I know a lot of photographers who have kind of done that.
Wow.
You know, and just being famous, being connected to somebody.
But I think that's it. Like what's weird is that like that fame is an ambition. And I think it was like Alan de Botton was saying, like, you can tell like you failed as a parent if your kid wants to be famous.
And yeah. I say that to every, like, I've said that to every porn star I've shot. Like don't forget what you're famous for. Because they forget it all the time. Like, I'm famous. I go, you're famous for taking it in the ass. Right. Like, you know, that's not...
Which is a fucking noble thing.
Yeah, but it's also, everybody can
Let's
do
be
it.
Clear.
But everybody
Try
can
it
do
once.
It.
Passed out.
Everybody can do it.
I'm just saying, like, not that sex isn't noble, but, you know...
No, when I was 15, I was really high on marijuana cigarettes. Jazz cigarettes. And I had just heard about massaging the prostate. I lost my virginity very late, so I got very good at masturbating. Very, very good at it. I was such a pro. Because
practice
that's all
makes
I had.
Improvement.
Yeah, that's all I had for a long time, you know. So I heard about massaging the prostate. I heard that was the new exciting way that you could ejaculate. So I didn't know how it worked. So I just went to town on my own ass. And I had to stay home from school the next day. I couldn't move. And my mom's a doctor. So I just had to, you couldn't fake sick. I had to be like, I fucked myself with a fucking electric toothbrush and now I fucked my asshole up.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, you're an idiot. You can just massage your prostate with your pinky if you want it.
Yeah, exactly.
But stay home.
That, you must have a really cool mom.
She's great. She's the best.
She sounds amazing.
She's amazing.
But, so how did you end up being a comedian?
Just the same as everyone
else. The darkness. Where's the darkness come from?
Yeah, exactly.
There is no comedian without the darkness.
No, of course there's plenty of darkness. when I was 11, I started having crippling panic attacks, like suicidal panic attacks at 11.
It's like going around.
I think
it's called puberty because I had it at the same time.
I know. Well, but it's a very isolating time, and you don't realize universal experiences at that age.
Right.
No one talks about that shit. So I probably was going. None of my experiences are unique to me. There will be no memoir of like a David Copperfield style of how crazy my adolescence was. It was pretty fucking standard.
You do write a memoir and the cover is like the cover is basically, you've all lived this, so you might as well not read it. Like, right. It's like there's nothing in here you don't already know.
Totally.
But I feel like that, like, most people just never get out of that space.
What do you mean?
There's a natural solipsism that happens when you're 11. Because you don't have experience.
Yeah, I'm an only child.
You don't have a point of view.
Right.
You can't. You don't have a life experience to.
Yes.
Whatever. But I feel like most people live their lives at this point so narcissistically, so solipsistically, like in this endless feedback loop of themselves.
Yeah.
That they never get that experience. It's like They never...
Yeah, they get stuck.
They never age out. It's like they yeah. live in that isolated 12-year-old space, like well into their 30s and 40s, and then they're going like, I'm in a spiritual crisis, or I'm whatever. Yep. It's like they never...
Yeah.
Grow up.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a, like the never emotional maturity. Emotional maturity is no longer encouraged. It's not... It's in fact, the opposite is rewarded. I mean, that you see that all the time. That's, you know... That's reality TV. Yeah. Can you act like a 6-year-old as an adult? Okay.
Well, but do you think like as a comedian, like is like when you are able to, when you develop a sense of critical thinking, mm-hmm. like when you escape the pod, essentially, like you kind of,
it takes a lot to realize that you're the problem. And I think a lot of people would really not want to face that. You know, it also takes a lot of things led to it. First of all, I dropped out of high school my senior year.
Bold move.
And I didn't go to college. I took some bullshit classes, but I didn't go to college. And that created an intellectual insecurity that probably made me a dick for a while. You know, going out of my way to use like huge fucking words. Because I was embarrassed. I dropped out of high school. But then I actually got some good learning done. And I started touring as a comic pretty young. I was 20. And
where did you get the self-confidence to do that?
Well, it didn't start as self-confidence. I think it started actually as like mania. It wasn't blind ego, I think, at that age. And then fortunately, I was fortunate enough to start young enough where you're too much of an idiot and not self-aware enough to realize how much you suck at it. And then when that starts fading and you become an actual grown-up, you can back it up because you're okay at it.
Right.
So it sort of was this weird X pattern happening at the same time. Because I, my current mind frame, I don't know if I could start comedy now. Like just if I had no experience, no anything, I don't know if I'm the type of person that could go out and like, you know, I feel like telling a bunch of people what's up. Like, that seems ridiculous to me.
I don't know. You know, I feel like it's a certain, like, constellation of personality. The ability to...
Wu-Tang.
The same ingredients that make someone funny could make them a comedian at 20 or at 35. Like, if you have that kind of... the ability to see the world that way and to make those observations and to kind of
have a voice
like it maybe you wouldn't be as good at like at your delivery.
It depends what's getting you into it. It depends the reasons behind it, because this could all go back again to the narcissism. Most people in any field in show business are hacky twats. Comedy included.
Yes.
So you know, it's quite easy to call yourself a comedian. You do an open mic and you're a comedian now. And you really have to look at your priorities. You have to look at what got you into it. It was never a childhood aspiration of mine. I'm not claiming to be any some sort of real deal. I already sound like an asshole. But when I started...
No, you're allowed to speak with some authority. I have you here as a comedian. So
I know.
You're allowed. I know, but when I started...
You know, to me, I was playing in a bunch of unsuccessful bands, and I was at a music festival, and there was a comedian going on between everyone, between the bands, and he was bombing. Now, had he been doing well, I might have never done comedy, but he was bombing so bad, but I thought it was hilarious. But the crowd was a very hipster, very indie rock crowd that was way too cool for him, and I got him.
Right.
I was like, because I've always felt too insecure for those people. All the years I was playing in bands, they're fucking thinner than me. They're cooler than me. They have more expensive clothes than me. They have more swagger than me. Look at those fucking hipsters. And here was this piece of shit, sweaty, bloated guy pouring his soul out. And I was like, oh, this is what punk rock is. Fuck this. And I talked to him, and then he told me about open mics. I didn't know it was a thing you could just start doing. Yeah. I thought there were like 5 comedians, like Seinfeld and like some other dudes.
Yeah.
I didn't know you could do it, because this was in Nashville. And then I was like off to the races. So it was more of a feel. It was more of a like, these are my people. This is it. This is my people.
No, I get that. Like, I think that everybody finds that.
Yeah.
That thing. You find that thing as you're going along, and I think that is part of spirituality.
I think most people don't. I think that's what we're talking about.
Most people don't. You're right.
It's very lucky.
But I said when you do find it, and it's like, and so I've tried to explain this to people who don't understand what I do. It's like I would say, like, I love what I do. I haven't worked a day in my life because I love it. And I'm lucky because I've done it as long as I have. But it's I always tell people it's not my job. It's not even a career. It's who I am.
Yeah.
Well, because, people are never encouraged to pursue things that make them happy. They're encouraged to do things that make other people happy. Right. Like, make other people think you're cool. Like, that's what you're encouraged to seek out the adulation of others, not the respect of yourself. Not that.
Yeah. No, I just feel like everybody has to do, I tell people all the time, and I write about it a lot of times, like, you got to do what you love. Because you only get one shot at this thing. So
do
what you love and then be the best at it.
But I think that's its own thing.
It takes a lot of pain, I think, to get to that conclusion.
Yeah. Yeah, to figure out what you love, to figure out what your favorite color is. All of that is its own job. Yeah,
well, I think to say fuck it takes a lot of work.
Oh, right.
Like, keep in mind, when I had dropped out of high school, I was on so many antidepressants during high school that I was a pathological liar.
Yeah.
I won't say pathological because I no longer do it, but it was, I was just numb.
It sounds like you just weren't in control of who you were.
No, I was completely numb, but therefore had lost all my friends. Yeah. Everyone had been pushed away. I moved to Canada for a while when I was 19 on my own. But I was the most isolated you could be.
Yeah.
And then it was like, I'm just going to do what I want. And that was the best decision I ever made.
It's kind of liberating. Like, once you
very liberating.
Oh.
Rock bottom's liberating.
It is. There's a quote
about that. The quote that I collect quotes, but one of the quotes I like is that is like, once you lose everything, you're free to do anything.
Yeah.
And I kind of believe that. Like, you have to hit the bottom and then the bottom of the bottom and the bottom of the bottom. Then you're like, fuck it. If I can survive this.
Don't let that scare you. Let it free you.
Just keep going.
We're all just dust, man. You know what I mean, dude? Just
life's a bitch and then you live and it gets worse.
Hey, man.
Yeah.
Hey, life is what you make of it. So with that, I hope all of my sirenauts try to make the most of every day that they have.
Boy, we really covered spirituality.
we said it three times.
We stayed on topic. Anyway, so if you would like to find my guest, Jesse Case, where can people find you?
Oh, that's, they can find me, like my address. People can follow
me. Yeah, if you would like
exactly.
to.
Exactly.
If they want. It starts with a 5. 4 digits. It starts with a 5. It's a house. At Jesse Case on Twitter. And I don't really know when this is up. So I'll be posting shows and stuff there. JesseCase.com, bullshitreference.tumblr.com, sort of a blog writing rambly thing. That's it.
Well, thank you very much. And I'm gonna have to check out your blog because I didn't know you kept
it's all yeah, but it's not updated. It's not good.
Well,
but yeah, check it out.
You need to, I guess, get on that then. Schedule it.
It's kind of
a sweet because you know I'm gonna judge you for it.
Okay, so. But we're gonna talk about writing. I know we have to wrap up the show, but I know I texted you that we've texted about this. I literally do like repair typewriters and use typewriters. I write so fucking much. So I'm thinking about scanning it like
as a
JPEG.
Please do.
You know, and then put that on my blog.
You should.
Because I hate writing on a computer and that's my blog is all written on a computer. So I hate it.
All right. Well, we're going to get Jesse to post Joe's blog. That's my new mission.
Because
we should share more good ideas. Need to be out there. And my sirenauts, you know where to find me. I'm on Twitter at Sovereign Sire. And at my very lovely website, ilovesov.com on the Julieland universe. And with that, I bid you all a sweet adieu.